Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. 3 times a week, Wendy and his cohorts bring you all of the NBA insights and analysis that you need. That's Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, available wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. Check him out on Brother From Another on the Peacock Network. Michael Smith, what's going on?
Not much, man. Good to see you. How you feeling?
Man, I'm all right, but I see something there, man. You up there in the Connecticut way. Y'all still in hoodies. It's short sleeve weather right now in New York, dog.
Well, honestly, that's all I really have. I haven't transitioned out of my hoodies yet. So I just grabbed it right fast. Like, you know, let me throw this hoodie on right fast.
I had that problem yesterday. I'm like, oh, damn. Yeah. Now I got to go back to how exactly do I do this? I'm not exactly sure how it plays.
And then my arms all white and whatnot. Like, I'm light skinned anyway. And then it's like even more light skinned because it's been all covered up all winter. So I got to tan all that kind of stuff first. You know, so I look a little weird without long sleeves on.
Yeah, you got to go out. You're going to have to go out there and do some work in the yard with no shirt on to get everything evened out.
Go try to hoop in my son if I don't throw my back out. You know, do something outside. Get some activity. Walk the dog a little bit more. Whatever
We're going to talk some NBA stuff, and I'm going to ask my favorite draft expert in this world, because Michael Smith is the Mr. Draft, because this has got some interesting stuff in it. But you just mentioned hooping with your son, because your son's what now, about 13?
He'll be 15. May 2nd, he'll be 15, yeah.
My son. Has he beaten you in basketball yet?
Oh my God, yeah. And I'm gonna be honest, I don't want to hurt his feelings. That says more about me than it does about him, quite honestly. I mean, don't get me wrong, like he is a 3-and-D guy. He is a 3-and-D guy. He fall in love a little too much with 3-pointers, and I try to get him to attack the basket a little bit more because he loves just camping out by that 3-point line. That's this NBA 2K Steph Curry generation as I get on my old man soapbox and yell at clouds. But no, he's better than me because I ain't never really had it. See, yeah. I told you this, and you being like a Houston dude, you understand this, right? So I came up because you and I both share an appreciation for Hakeem Olajuwon.
Right.
So when I was in middle school, I never told you this before. I was in middle school. I was about 5'10", 5'11", in middle school. So your boy had a mean baseline turnaround jumper. I was out there on the block. See, I come from a time as the Ubermani where the bigs didn't have to handle. So I never really learned how to handle. Then I stopped growing. Then I couldn't get on the court because I couldn't handle, I couldn't shoot, and I couldn't rebound no more. And I wasn't effective in the post. So my career was over around 9th, 10th grade.
But see, that's why I thought your son would never beat you, because I thought you'd just knock his ass out.
Like, yeah, old man strength.
Yeah, I mean, just every time you think you come to the rim, man, you're going down. See, my pops was 43 when I was born, right? So I missed out on his prime. My brother.
I'm 43 now.
Yeah, my brother, however, did not. And so the game with them was, and my dad had this with me too, first time and beat daddy, give you $100, right? And my brother had so many stories of thinking it was coming, and then the hardest foul in the history of mankind takes place.
On game point, yeah.
Yes. So my brother's got a little scar on the back of his head, like below the skull part, right there in the fat part, where like if you are a person who got hot dogs, where the hot dogs start.
Yeah.
And so it's game point. My brother, I think he said he gave daddy a left shoulder, went right. And in my head, I imagine like, doom, 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 doom.
God, doom, doom, one doom, shining doom, moment. Doom, doom, doom.
And he's going up. And next thing you know, he feels this chunk come out the back of his head because daddy was trying to reach and grab him by the collar. And before he could get to the collar, he took a chunk of skin out of his neck.
What?
Still got the collar, by the way, on the way down. Brought him down, and that was not the day of the $100 coronation.
Not today. No, I mean, listen, I never like left any marks or scars, but I fouled him hard. Like his first hard fouls came from me. I've been fouling him hard since he was a kid.
Yes.
Like he wasn't gonna go out, you know, in the park or at practice or in the game and be complaining to the refs about no fouls. The crazy part is when the trash talk starts. Because like, don't get your feelings hurt. Because then you'd be talking to him like it's not your son. So all the things that you have, like all the affirmations and all the nice things you said
out the window.
Out the window. Now you're just trying to hurt his feelings and get in his head. Like, what you getting upset for? What you getting upset for? They go call your mama. She can't help you out here. Your mama can't help you out here. Like, so it's, bro, we've had some times. He gets me with the step back though. You asked about like coming to the basket. He don't come inside on me. He give me with the step back. He just, you know, he got a nice outside shot.
That's what I'm saying. You got to take.
He didn't get from me.
He stay outside. You just got to get in his face. We try to go by you. Boom. You know, you just got to, you just got to hit them all.
I just ain't as quick as I used to be, man. You know, let's put it that way.
Nah, man, playing. That's the thing. That element of trash talk. My dad would just be like, look, I am going to beat you and you need to get over that and learn how to deal with it. It didn't even feel like trash talk. It just felt like, hey, I'm just letting you know how
to lesson. Going.
I'm about to beat you.
Yes. Yes. Process it.
Yes.
Do something about it. Come back and get better.
Yeah, I don't even think he cared about me coming back and getting better. I mean, I imagine there was some pride when I could finally beat him, but he was past his prime, so he probably had excuses.
Do you still hoop now?
Oh, no, I ain't hooped in who knows how long. Man, I had a knee surgery when I was 15, right?
Yeah.
And one of my goals for the rest of my adult life, I might get hurt, but I ain't getting injured.
I had mine when I was 16. What'd you do? I tore my ACL. What'd you do?
I grew too fast.
Oh, okay.
I grew too fast. And then, like, my stuff is still, like, a bit messed up, right? But, like, I realized I did not enjoy basketball enough, nor was I good enough at basketball to be out here putting myself through pain. Now, when I do, like, fairly physical stuff, I can tell there's an Achilles tear waiting for me.
So close. Yes.
I can feel it.
Dude, it's – I don't know – what it was, but one morning my back hurt getting out of bed. I'm like, yo, I'm officially old. It's like that shit comes up on you like that. It just sneaks up on you. So I'm with you, man. I'm super, super conservative in my athletic endeavors. I just don't want to end up in the hospital.
Yep, that's all I'm saying. I'm just trying to stay in shape, right?
Which is why my son beats me. That's part of it. I'm not trying to put him in the hospital, and I ain't trying to end up in the hospital. And the latter is far more likely at this stage of my life.
Yeah, like I like golf. I don't get on the course so much, but I hit the driving range, do my workout, I do my yoga. I would say that I'm physically active, but I ain't really trying to engage in these fast twitch activities.
Hey, look, if I get the need to play football, here's my outlets. fantasy football or Madden, if that narcotic come calling again.
Yes, yes. All right, now we going to get to some NBA stuff, but since I have you here and you are a draft guy, you love the draft. I kind of like to pick on you about it a little bit, but it comes in handy in times like these.
This time of year, yes, it's our time.
Do you realize? I think I got a text from one of my colleagues. I don't know if he said it out loud, so I ain't going to put his name on it. But he was all just right. You realize we probably going to have three black quarterbacks at the top of the draft, all of whom are completely different. One of whom is perhaps the first quarterback I can think of getting slammed because he don't want to run.
But not running? I said the same thing. I said that on the show. I was like, this is the, because we were talking about it around the Super Bowl and you know, having two black quarterbacks going against each other. I was like, yo, CJ Stroud getting criticized for not running. We actually have come a long way.
Yes.
Yes.
I had the same progress thought on that and just the general level of it where those three dudes are completely different. Right. Mm-hmm. All of them can move, including Stroud. Like, I get why people might be like, yo, you might want to run a little bit more. But it's kind of the why don't you do it? Damn it. That's a little different, you know, in the way that things go. But you got Bryce Young, who is the little homie, like the Drew Brees comp comes out there. But I don't know if he got that. You know what I'm saying? That giraffe situation
with Drew Brees standing out on here his toes
and stretching his neck out, doing everything he can. Yeah. Man, I tell you, tell Drew Brees, I thought you were tall. I bet he fight you. we have Stroud, who I remember the first time I really watched him play was the Rose Bowl game against Utah.
Mm-hmm.
That game where
Jackson Smith and Jigma's
had 847 yards receiving.
Right. It was like, I'm done. You've seen all you need to see out of me.
I don't even know why he came back. Like, forget this. But I remember watching that game and being like, that might be the number one pick in the draft. Like, and it wasn't. After you do this a while, you just know it when you see it, right? Like, you know, like, that's a guy that's going to go in the first round. The first time I saw Joe Burrow his senior year at LSU, I was like, that guy's going to be the number one pick. Like, you just know what the league wants. It's not even necessarily how great they are. But then there's Anthony Richardson, who I saw play one time while he was the backup at Florida as a freshman. And I was like, oh, well, that's a first round pick. I know that much. And then I watched him in that Utah game, and I was the next year, and I was like, oh, that's the number one pick in the draft. I said something on here once, Elle and I were talking, and I was like, look, I like the high ceiling guy. And I said at the time, give me Anthony Richardson over Stetson Bennett. Of course, the Georgia people went through the roof, understandably and not entirely unfairly. But if you just see the quote, you missed the point, right?
When was that, by the way?
Middle of early last year.
Yeah, because like in hindsight, that feels like, wait, people had a problem with you saying that?
Yes, yes. But at the time, you know, it was, well, I mean, I also thought they should have started JT Daniels over Stetson because you go with the high ceiling guy. And I think they would have won a national championship with JT Bennett. I think they'd have won a national championship with me. That's no shade to Stetson Bennett, who became a very, very good player. But amazing how confident you can get when you know one of these big motherfuckers is going to be open. Don't you worry. Right. We'll work that part out. But Richardson might be the most physically talented quarterback I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Cam Newton included.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought, as of last year, and going back to Stroud for a second, Fields didn't run like that at Ohio State. Fields last year, I'm like, my apologies to Michael Vick, who's the most sudden and maybe the quickest quarterback we've ever seen. My apologies to Lamar Jackson, who, you know, is the most dynamic running quarterback we've seen. And then obviously you and I go back to the days of Randall Cunningham and so on and so forth. And of course, Cam Newton, as you mentioned. But Justin Fields right now is the best running quarterback I've ever seen. When you combine speed, power, and elusiveness, I've never seen anybody like Justin Fields hurting people the way that he does when he runs. Who am I missing? I'm not giving Cam his prop. Cam wasn't as fast. Cam was not as fast as Justin
Fields. No. He was not. But I can't think of anyone I'd want to tackle less.
Yeah. And well, I'll tell you what. Oh, yeah, well, that's true. And here's the thing about Cam, and I'm going to get back to Richardson in a second. Sorry. Here's the thing about Cam, and tell me if this is revisionist history on my part. Because Cam, remember his first game against the Cardinals, what did he throw for, like 380 yards or something crazy?
Yeah, I think it was 400.
Was it 400? He came out slinging his first game. Cam, except for around the goal line, was a reluctant runner. Cam was not somebody that was just like taking off and running. Cam was like a passer more than he was a runner, but when he ran, he was as good as anybody that did it. But I say all that to say, Richardson has a chance to be the best dual threat quarterback we've seen because of, I mean, that amount of size, that amount of speed, that package, you just don't see that. And not to say nothing of the arm as well.
That's what I was about to say. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I want to be very clear. I'm not saying this is going to happen. You say he could be the best running quarterback. With the talent that he has, he could be the best quarterback we've ever seen. Like, that is the way...
He's a creative player.
Yeah, the way far off ceiling. He is the creative player. Like, yeah. I mean, Josh Allen is the comp, and I made that early that Josh Allen is the comp, right? And Josh Allen is the guy that tricks you into thinking that you can fix the stuff that Richardson needs to fix. Yeah. Now, maybe...
Accuracy typically don't get fixed.
It typically doesn't get fixed.
Yeah.
And then Josh Allen did it. And now it's like, oh, but the thing with Richardson on accuracy is the problem seems so obviously correctable. And the thing that you're not going to need to fix, which is the hardest thing to fix, is he keep them eyes down the field when all them folks like pocket movement, processing, all of that stuff that you're not going to need to fix. What I think is going to ultimately do him in is ain't none of these teams going to have the patience to be like, son, we're not even giving you a jersey this year. Sit over there, watch what's going on. I'm not sure. I've seen no evidence to indicate that playing as a rookie makes you better down the road in your career. Just let them post up, let them watch, just do drills all the time. Yeah. Do that. Do the little study.
Some of them are just able to do it. It's almost like they weren't good because they played as a rookie. They're good in spite of the fact they played as a rookie. Like whether it's Peyton, whether it's Matt Ryan, whether it's Joe Burrow, you know, some of them could do it. The Colts could sit him. They could play Gardner Minshew this year.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Colts would be a team that could send it, that could afford to do it.
I think the Colts could get away with doing it. I think Carolina's going to take Stroud, so I think it's probably going to wind up being a move.
Really? You're not buying the young smoke that's been dominating lately?
It is very difficult for me to believe that an NFL team is going to take a 6-foot flat quarterback number one again.
Maybe.
I mean,
maybe 6 feet.
this is what I say on that. And I'm not saying they're the same player, but most of the good things that there were to say about Baker Mayfield that you thought could overcome the height stuff is all the same stuff that you ultimately say about Bryce Young. You say Bryce Young is Drew Brees if you're optimistic. You could say Bryce Young is Baker Mayfield if you didn't want to be remembering that Baker Mayfield was an incredibly accurate, great, dynamic college football player. One of the greatest college football players of all time. If Young is closer to that, then I don't know. But I just don't. I have a hard time thinking that size matters in this league and taking that guy when there are reasonable options that are much bigger. I still can't believe they're going to do it.
The criticism for Baker as a pro, especially toward the end in Cleveland, was that, and help me out here, was that he wasn't seeing the field, right? So is he not seeing the field because he literally couldn't see it, right? He didn't process things because – the Bryce Young part, and this goes back to just like the progress that we've made, talking about all being different. Like, I've had people tell me, people in the league tell me that Bryce Young could be an offensive coordinator tomorrow. Like, his ability to process information, his decision-making, all the things that make that, that separate the physical freaks from the guys that make it and the guys that don't, he's got it. He's got it all. All the intangibles, all the processing, all the intellect, all the intelligence, the ability to read defenses, to make quick decisions. He's crafty, he's savvy. It's like, he just don't have a few inches on him. I mean, I wouldn't mind it, especially in a place like Carolina, where they got this a really good offensive line. And they went and invested in the running back, and they can get a little bit more receiver help. I love what Carolina's done as a side note, just in terms of being this quarterback incubator. Like, they struggled to replace Cam Newton all these years. And David Tepper was like, okay, we're getting, you know, a coach with a QB background, we getting a staff with a QB background. Hell, we bringing in Jim Caldwell as a consultant around this mug, and we're gonna make whatever quarterback we pick, we're gonna set him up for success. I think Bryce Young could be really, really, really good. I'm with you though that I would say Stroud, just given not only his physical makeup, but what the dude has put on tape. He's an exceptional quarterback. He's the safer one, and Richardson is if you want to swing for the fences, because Richardson. I got a chance to talk to him at the combine, and I was very impressed with him as a person, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he is extremely mature and grounded. You know, he studied to be a firefighter when he was in high school.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he was going to be a firefighter like that. Like he went to a special school. I forget the name of it in Florida that trained him to be a firefighter. So he's a quarterback who's literally adept at putting out fires, and so like he's got a great way about him. And the thing that people don't talk enough about is say, oh, well, he hasn't played enough. Richardson got better as the year went on at Florida. And some of the mistakes he was making early in the season, he was not making later in the season. And he's got the work ethic. The thing you worry about with a lot of these young guys and inexperienced guys is, are they going to work to get better? Josh Allen worked at getting better.
Yes.
Anthony Richardson strikes me as the kind of guy that will work to get better. I would not have any fear of his 50%, whatever it was, completion percentage, or his flawed mechanics. I'll tell you another quick story. You've heard of Bill Nunn, the longtime Steelers scout. Yeah. One of the things he used to always say.
Hold on, right fast. For people who are unfamiliar with Bill Nunn, Bill Nunn was the HBCU man, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
He worked at the Pittsburgh Courier. He had the Black College All-American team that he put out every year. And he literally transformed the Steelers and the league by scouting HBCUs and drafting people like John Stallworth, for example.
Yes. LC Greenwood.
So he basically helped build the Steelers dynasty, and it's the first Black contributor to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This was year before last. But one of the things he used to do in the Steelers draft room was whenever people would give their reports, he would, you know, he was in the back. He was that old man that sat in the back, and he would interrupt him like, that's coaching. That's coaching. Don't tell me about coaching. Don't tell me about the things that they can be taught to do better. Tell me about their natural traits that cannot be taught. Tell me about the things that they have in terms of athleticism, in terms of their feet, in terms of movement, in terms of instincts, that we can't bring them in this building and let the coaches do their job and bring the best out of them. Way too much of quarterback conversations is whether these guys are finished product. When coming out of college, they ain't supposed to be finished products. So wherever Anthony Richardson goes, it's going to be incumbent upon like them, like you just said, to redshirt him or bring him along at his own pace. And for the coaches, like they did with Josh Allen, like Daboll and Tony Romo and everybody else that's working with Josh Allen, put him in a lab and got him better. It's like, hey, help this kid fix his flaws so that he could be the best he could be. That's why you get paid all the money you do as coaches.
All right. So a lot of things you said there, low-key, halfway, have turned me into Anthony Richardson to Carolina. Now, I'm gonna get to there. But first thing I'm gonna say is you made an interesting point about Bryce Young and the processing and everything. And a difference between he and Baker Mayfield is playing in Bill O'Brien's offense is probably doing better for you to prepare you for the NFL than playing in Lincoln Riley's offense. Like that's a note and something to remember when Caleb Williams comes around too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
But that one there is a fair question to ask, but I had completely forgotten about them bringing Caldwell in Carolina. And what we know about Caldwell, what Caldwell will do for you as a quarterback is help you clean up stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Example one, Peyton Manning. And yeah. You, for those of you who are new to this Peyton Manning thing, go look at when Caldwell started working with him, which I want to say was like 2002 or somewhere in there. Like he comes, you know, he's a dungy guy in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Manning had a couple of struggle-ish years there. The 2001 season was absolutely terrible, and that's the one where Jim Mora was so mad at Peyton Manning that it led to the playoff speech, which ultimately led to him getting fired. Mm-hmm. But if you go look, it wasn't so great there. Caldwell, and Manning gives a lot of credit to Caldwell for helping clean up a lot of his stuff and get better, and that is a large part as to why Caldwell ultimately got that head coaching job, is because that was Peyton Manning's guy. The Correct. Other example was you saw a Matthew Stafford jump in Detroit, and that's when Caldwell got there. And the reason they brought him in was that improvement. And what I remember Caldwell said when he got there was, how are you going to fix this with Stafford? He was like, oh, baby, I got drills. Like, he's just like, I know things to do to help this guy clean up these things that are his mistakes. So if we are bringing in the cleanup man to work with Frank Reich, who at least at one point could figure out what to do with Carson Wentz, who was another guy who needed some cleanup when he got there. Anthony Richardson at number one, but Tepper's too impatient to not play him. But if we can get him in and not play him and just spend a year working with Jim Caldwell,
Don't forget the third example. Made this man a lot of money, Joe Flacco.
That's right. In a month. He did it in Flacco. A month.
And what was so wild about resume is impeccable. Quarterback whisperer, that's the guy.
Yo, what was so wild about that month is I did not think Caldwell did a good job as play caller, offensive coordinator, because it always seemed like they were in third and eight. And every time they were in third and eight, Joe Flacco would somehow figure out a way to get that ball down the field and make it happen.
Dude, they have spared no expense on his coaching staff. Jim Caldwell, one of the smartest coaches I've ever encountered. And listen, we could talk about Carolina and doing Steve Wilkes dirty, given the job that he did as an interim and you know, the plight of black coaches and him being just the latest and greatest example. But if you compartmentalize that for a moment and just look at the staff that they assembled with Reich and Caldwell and Sean Jefferson and Thomas Brown and even Josh McCown, it's like they got some dudes that know what it looks like.
Oh, I didn't know they hired Josh. He's the quarterback coach.
He's the quarterback coach. Yeah.
Good for him.
He's the quarterback coach. Yeah. Which is much better than the head coach that he was supposed to be in Houston for the longest time, right? Remember?
He is ultimately going to be a head
coach. He will be, but he needs to take that progression. He couldn't jump from high school to head coach the way they were talking about in Houston. I like Josh a lot, known as because he was with the Raiders. So he's going to be good for whatever quarterback they draft. So you think in Richardson now, you like Richardson going there because of that infrastructure?
If you've got the infrastructure to improve him, then yeah, go ahead and do it. The ceiling, mm-hmm. I just think, is so much higher than you're going to get.
That's one way to replace Cam.
I mean, that's really what it will wind up being. Let me tell you also, when I realized that Anthony Richardson was a little bit more of a grown-up than you would expect at that age, do you remember him changing his jersey number?
Oh, because of AR-15, because he was going to call AR-15.
But somebody at his age, and I don't know if it was his own idea, if somebody put the bug in his ear, but to put out a statement and be like, hey, man, nickname would be cool, I get it, but nah, this don't look right. So I'm going to change my number 7 and we're going to remove me from any association with the AR-15. I'm like, yo, that's really wise. Like, I hate that you got to do it, but that is really wise.
Yeah, no, he's got a great way about him, a great, his teammates like him. I'm pretty sure he was voted captain. Another thing too, and I'll throw in Will Levis in this as well, man. It's like, and this is why, this is part of the reason why I love the draft, is obviously it's all guessing, but you gotta be, in your convictions, you have to factor, if you convicted about somebody, you have to factor in, wait a second, like, what were they dealing with? What were their circumstances? Because, like, Will Levis, his junior year versus his senior year, it's two different players, partly because he was in two different sets of circumstances. His offensive coordinator went back to the NFL. His offensive line was gone. You know, Wandale Robinson gets drafted by the Giants, so on and so forth. I mean, you know, what do you expect? Whereas, was that a situation ripe for Anthony Richardson to flourish in Florida? Would that be fair? Probably not. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of it is factoring in what they had to deal with, what they overcame, but how they led in spite of adversity. Because to me, and I said this about head coaches, man, like too many times when owners look for head coaches, they want the people who've been on the fast track. They want the wonderkins. They want the geniuses. They want the guys that have won everywhere they've been. Nah, man, give me somebody that's been through the fire. Give me somebody that has, like, not only won, but also been a part of a rebuild, or had to tear it down, or had some difficult seasons and rebounded, or led when things weren't convenient or when things weren't comfortable. So, like, give me a quarterback that you've seen how they handle adversity. It's almost like in Draft Day. Remember that corny-ass movie Draft Day? Well, I watch it all the time this time of year because it got some good lines in it. And rest in peace. What was Vontae Mack? Vontae Mack. He says to Kevin Costner's character, he says, hey, watch him in this game. Watch how he reacts in this game. And you can see the fear when the rush is coming. It's the same thing with these quarterbacks to me, man. It's like, hey, what are they like when things aren't going well? How do their teammates respond to them when things aren't going well? How do they carry themselves? That says as much to me about a quarterback as one who thrives behind a great offensive line. No disrespect to anybody who had it. Now, I'm not trying to take a knock at Stroud or anybody like that, but who thrives behind a great offensive line, who thrives with great wide receivers when everything is going well. So, you know, that Chadwick Boseman character, Vontae Mack, the one that ended up going number one overall, he was like, yo, look at this quarterback when the heat is on, how he responds. So to me, when it comes to Will Levis, or even when it comes to Anthony Richardson, when stuff was going poorly, I like what I saw from both of those guys.
I'm going to say this about Will Levis, though. I done seen people try to talk themselves into Blaine Gabbert over Cam Newton. I done seen people.
I ain't say over Richardson.
No. Hold on. Let me finish. I done seen people try to talk themselves into Jake Locker over him, right? I've seen people try to talk themselves into a lot of illogical quarterbacks under these circumstances. You feel me?
The guys that struggled, despite their
circumstances. I guess what
Cutler was another one like that. Yeah.
I ain't seen nobody try to talk themselves into Will Levis over any of these other three gentlemen. Knowing what we know about the world and the way that evaluation goes, tells me he must not be as good as those other guys.
No, okay, that's well done. So basically, you're saying, like, so Locker at Washington, Gabbert at Mizzou, Cutler at Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
they all were getting that benefit of the doubt.
Nobody's doing that. Maybe that's a marker of progress, or maybe that is a staggering indictment of Will Levis. I've heard some of it.
I've heard some. Now, it's not as prominent, but I've heard people account for the fact that yes, he did not play very well. I'm not necessarily talking about his performance this past year. Like, oh,
No. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm not pushing back on what you're saying. I'm just saying I know the industrial complex in producing these draft evaluations, and who gets where and when and why, and who gets the benefit of the doubt, and who gets overrated, and who does not. And even with all of that happening, even every now and then I hear somebody say they want to take Hendon Hooker over him. And all I'm saying is, Will Levis's daddy cannot understand why nobody is giving his boy his rightful props.
Well, first of all, you win for using industrial complex in this context, which you win for that one. Hendon Hooker, though, now you talking.
Oh, you
now you talking. I'm all on Hendon Hooker. Oh, I love me some Hendon Hooker, boy.
Even though he's old coming off the knee injury.
Well, but the knee will heal. Here's the thing about old. How old is Josh? How old is Jordan Love at this point?
Probably about 25.
I mean, we already talked about Anthony Richardson probably got a sit. Yeah. I don't 25, like, okay, quarterbacks play until they're 35 anyway.
Fair.
You know what I mean? That's just like, I don't need a guy that's 21 or 22 thinking like, because I don't think he is beyond development age. I don't think Hendon Hooker can't get better. I don't think he's reached his peak.
But how good is he when he's not the oldest player on the field? That's my question. Like, being 20, that physical and mental maturity matters. Now, he put up the incredible numbers. He might have won the Heisman if he had not gotten hurt. The question I've heard is, and again, it's not his fault, he ran the offense that was in front of him, but how much can you tell about all the other stuff, the defense reading stuff and everything else coming out of Heupel's offense?
No, and that's fair, and that is very fair. From what I understand, in meetings and in conversations and on the proverbial chalkboard or whiteboard or whatever it is they use nowadays, he's aced it.
He's got it.
He's super, super smart. I think that maturity, is there something to be said for having an edge on your competition? Sure, but in the league, I think that helps in terms of being able to step in earlier than later and playing.
That's true.
I like the kid, man. I think he's first of all, okay, here we go. More progress. Sneaky athletic. I mean, the dude can move. He can move. He can run. He's got a really good arm. I mean, I'm sold on him, man. Like, I'm no quarterback expert or nothing like that. I like to think I know it when I see it. But, man, I think that's the dude that I would be really trying to angle to get. Like late in the first round, get that extra fifth year option on him, you know, especially if he's going to sit this year rehabbing. Man, somebody like Minnesota, bro, that'd be a no-brainer for me.
Yo, and they are steady. They like, somebody, anybody, everybody, come take this job from Kirk Cousins. We know where this is not going to go, even though, look, man, Kirk Cousins was a legitimate Pro Bowler last year.
I feel like an oxymoron, but I agree with you. But, I mean, but legitimate Pro Bowler, what is that nowadays?
The starter, but the starter was Geno Smith.
He was. And Tyler Huntley was in the Pro Bowl too.
Yeah, no, but Tyler Huntley was like after wouldn't nobody else show up.
Right.
Geno Smith and Kirk Cousins were the 1 and 2 quarterbacks in the NFC last year. Like there's really no way around that. They were the two guys. Yeah. And interestingly, and where this is going to be, it kind of plays into the discussion we're having about where these quarterbacks are going to go. They were the only two quarterbacks worth a damn last year, like between like 30 and 40.
Yeah.
That was
between 30 and 40.
Yeah.
Huh.
Like once you took like a Tom Brady out of the sample.
Right. Stafford was hurt. Yeah.
Stafford was hurt. It was those guys. Say, to me, Seattle, who got themselves lucky because that second that pick they got high this year. That's that's from the Jamal Adams trade, right?
Oh, no, Russell Wilson trade. Yeah.
Russell Wilson trade. Yeah. My bad.
They nailed that.
They got that. Look, they the ones that need to go find a way to get Richardson, or if they can get Hooker, find a way to go pull that off. Because you playing with surplus capital right now. Detroit, I'd be trying to find a way to move up and get Richardson and ride this Jared Goff thing out as long as we can. Because I mean, I just don't know how long that's going to go as well as it did for the last half of the season.
See, that's why you'd be a good GM, and that's why you was great in franchise mode. Because you know that if you up at the top of the draft when you're really not supposed to be up at the top of the draft, you get a quarterback. Like, it's like going out to the grocery store, and, like, you get certain things at the grocery store, whether you need it or not. Like, you get some bread, you get some milk, because you're going to need it. If you are an NFL team and you don't have a young quarterback, you don't want to be in a position where you like where you're Houston or where you're Carolina and you up there for the wrong reasons. surplus capital is perfect. You're like, yo, we up in the top five. Yo, if there's a quarterback we're taking here, let's take that dude now, sit him, and then when we need him, we got him, as opposed to going on this search for him. Green Bay's done it. Like, they might have pissed off their last two quarterbacks, but guess what that Green Bay ain't looking for? A quarterback.
I want to take a quick moment before we get out of here.
Man, this time flew.
Yeah, it did. Talk about these NBA playoffs that I am very interested in. As we speak, we are in the midst of the play-in. But the Lakers won last night. They won on Tuesday night. I want to make sure I get my dates right, people. Lakers won on Tuesday night over Minnesota. This means they get the game against the Grizzlies. And Dylan Brooks has already said he would love to put LeBron out early. And I think the Grizzlies need to be very worried. I've been a Lakers skeptic all year long. I can't believe where they are. But these are the two things for me. One, Jaren Jackson Jr., probably defensive player of the year, has had a history in the playoffs of being a hack master. And Anthony Davis is out here looking like an MVP level player. They got to do something with that. Number two, they are thin up front, the Grizzlies. Like, Brandon Clark's out. Steven Adams out. How does this go? Like, not like the Lakers are coming out here with the Twin Towers, but still.
Sure.
This could go bad. This could go very bad very quick for the Grizzlies. I'm not saying it will, but it could.
Yeah, no, the Grizzlies, if they're not careful, could be that team that was like sound and fury signifying nothing. Like, they could end up being like all talking that got nothing to show for it, you know, like supposed to be next, but never really take that next step. Listen, man, the Lakers had the best record in the league. Is it since the trade deadline or the Western Conference, I should say?
Western Conference,
is it since the trade deadline or the All-Star break?
I think it's the trade deadline.
With a top five defense. They're looking real bubble-ish right now. They're looking real bubble-ish when everybody's healthy. And you neglected to mention one Austin Reeves. Because I was thinking about you last night, because I knew what we were going to be talking. I was like, man, I know Bamani would feel me on this. Does anything energize and excite
a
fan base?
Nothing.
Other than a white boy that came out of nowhere?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing in this world.
People going,
nothing in this world.
Listen, my man gets props. He has balled out, 17 points in March? He's been a revelation. But there is something about the industrial complex. There's something about the excitement that type of story brings to an NBA community. It's just crazy.
He is a legitimately good player, so I don't want to patronize him.
Yes,
it's kind of the same thing with Caruso. And the difference, though, for me with Austin Reeves and Caruso is largely aesthetic, in that Caruso is not giving you boy next door, like I might have hooped in Indiana vibes.
Right. Right. That's His name ain't Austin Reeves.
Yeah. That's not what Caruso's giving you. Yeah. Austin Reeves is a little different. Other thing that's very interesting. Do you notice that none of the white dudes in the NBA that like get to that place ever got no tattoos? Like, do you notice that the white dudes in athletics who do, for lack of a better term, the black people things, they ain't never the ones that's tatted up. Like them Jason Kelsey and the white boys on the line, they be tatted down to the cuticles. You know what I'm saying? Them receivers and these hoopers, for whatever reason, they're like, nah, they gonna get it confused if I go too far. They'll never get to that place. But no,
really, my name ain't Dante. I can't be getting these.
Even white Dante ain't tatted up. Like, I don't know. And it's not like white boys don't get tattoos, but it's the wildest thing. Right. When they get in them spaces, they not there unless you the Birdman, who, by the way, when I was in Miami for them championship runs, LeBron James could jump up, tap the banner, come down and dunk, and it would not get an ovation like Chris Anderson blocking somebody's shot.
Man of the people. Failed. Man of the people.
No, they was given the MVP chance for Austin Reeves in that game.
I'm telling you, what a story. But now, in all seriousness, the bottom of the West bracket might be more intimidating than the top of it. I mean, from four, I would say four, not five, but I would say four now. The Lakers could seriously knock out the Grizzlies, and I could see them. Who would they get? So if Lakers are at
they
seven,
would get the,
Grizzlies
oh, they,
two,
they would get the Sacramento Golden State winner.
Ooh.
Oh, no, no,
The Sacramento have a chance to be anything other than a good story, because I cannot wait to watch that game Saturday night.
Did you see this? That apparently Sacramento has not played a game on ABC since the first night that ESPN had the NBA package, which is the LeBron, year 2002.
LeBron, well, okay, no. Wait, but LeBron on ABC. You said ABC. Because LeBron's first game was against Sacramento, wasn't it?
But that wasn't on. But I remember that game was not on. That game wasn't nowhere for you to watch.
It wasn't? Oh, okay. Nope. I guess I just remember the highlights. Okay.
Yeah. No.
So they haven't been on ABC since 02.
Since 02. Literally.
Wow.
I mean, literally. It was Christmas 02.
That's why them tickets cost $500?
The first night of the package.
Wow.
They had not been. Nobody is seeing them play. We just hear everybody saying they can't win. Everybody saying they're not good enough. Everybody saying they don't play good enough defense. Da 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 da. All this stuff, right? I feel like Sacramento this year has been like when Andre Ware won the Heisman and they was on probation, so nobody saw them play on television.
It's a good pull right there.
I was watching
Andre Ware.
No, I was watching First Take and Stephen A was talking about it. And he was like, De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis. He said. I forget who he's. I think he may have been talking about Perk. He says, and our man Kendrick Perkins reminded me that Harrison Barnes is on the team. Like, people don't even remember who plays for Sacramento. I have no idea if they can or cannot beat the Warriors. But if they cannot, there is a chance that we could get Lakers-Warriors. And if we don't get Lakers-Warriors under that scenario where the Warriors win, we get Grizzlies-Warriors, which is just as good, if not better. We got a good chance at Denver versus either the Clippers or the Suns, which is a fascinating first round series is any that I have seen. Like the West, they going to have us sleepy because them games is going to be something all the way through in that conference.
You ain't never lying. That's why I woke up this morning just throwing a sweatshirt or a hoodie. Because your boy slept in after last night.
I gave that game all I could. I was like, Minnesota got up big. I was like, they're going to blow it because I watched them in last year's playoffs. You know what I'm saying? They're going to find a way to mess this up. And then I went to sleep and woke up and saw that it in fact happened. And of course, it happened the way that I thought it would happen, which is Karl Towns looked like a monster in the first half. And then apparently after I went to sleep, he went right back to being Karl Towns.
What happens if Minnesota, when Rudy Gobert gets back, what happens if they lose to OKC or New Orleans?
Dude, I was wondering the same thing. Like they're playing with their season on the line, and this dude, they just traded 4 first-round picks. And as my man Dan pointed out that I forgot when we talked about this last time, and Walker Kessler, who I'm not sure Minnesota, that Utah would trade straight up for Rudy Gobert, even if the salaries matched. At this point, he's coming back. The dudes on the team clearly don't like him. I don't know how I feel about the idea that somebody called Rudy Gobert, he punched him for it, and the dude that called him ain't have to say nothing. You know how mad I would be if I got punished for stealing off on somebody for calling me a bitch, and that dude get to act like he was right? That is the most staggering indictment of all of this, because when Kevin Durant did not punch Draymond for calling him a all acknowledge Draymond was wrong for that.
And he was, and he got not just criticized, but even internally, they let him know, can't have that.
Right.
In this case, it felt like Kyle Anderson basically said the quiet part out loud within Minnesota. Yo,
and everybody seems to be like, well, what if he is? No. Like I get you.
The dogs holler.
There may be something to that. But we don't know. You don't like. Did you see where also I saw this interesting where Draymond made the point? He was like, yo, I actually got some respect for Rudy because he stood up for himself. And I'm like, wow, okay, me and Draymond seem to be the only two people on this island. Like, all right, at least you did something about it.
Well, I would. Here's what I would say. I would say, can't go calling him a and not expecting to get a reaction out of it. You can't get called a and just take it without perpetuating and confirming that you are, in fact, a. Which is why that word will always get you fired off.
Yep.
Okay. So it's like this was the only way this is going to happen. If I'm Monday morning quarterback, this thing. If you go punch him, because you getting suspended for that wasn't worth it. That juice wasn't worth the squeeze. Punching him in the upper shoulder or whatever pushed him real hard with, it's like that wasn't even worth it.
I mean, it clearly wasn't what he was trying to do. He had to go with the go-go gadget, given what the circumstance was.
I, That just looks like somebody that don't know how to punch or just not used to punching, which is fine. I'm not saying he should. He's a basketball player, not a boxer.
Yeah.
That was just a weak punch. And you go get suspended for real for something for real. But having said all that, Rudy Gobert, there are degrees of wrong. Should Kyle Anderson have said that? And more so, should he have said that and not expected a reaction? No. But you can't go punching a teammate or punching a teammate on the sideline in the middle of a game.
No, you're right.
Like, you just can't do it. No matter what they call you, you can't do it.
No, you're right. You are 100% correct about that.
Because Kevin Garnett has said worse to teammates and opponents, no, for example, that have not punched him.
Yeah, but here's the thing, okay? I saw JJ talk about this on his pod because he said it made him angry to see the thing with Rudy. And his thing was like, I've heard that said about guys on the team so many times and nobody did anything, da, da, da. But come on, man. We watched the lip reading part of it.
Yeah.
That wasn't one of those that happened every day, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't and by the way,
yeah. There are degrees of it.
Kyle Anderson telling Rudy, go block some shots. And Rudy being like, go get some rebounds. And your response being, you a what?
It was also too, like, because there was a story and people have cited this. Kyle Anderson, I would have Rudy Gobert say Kyle Anderson's kind of aggressive, but I try not to take it personally, something like that. It's like, there's also, you got to consider the history, the context. It's like, somebody saying you a that you ain't already got some kind of level of professional tension with is one thing. But it's not so much hit dogs holler. It's more like, I didn't have it with your You know what I'm saying? And I don't care who around, I don't care what the circumstances is, that you didn't call me, because it probably wasn't Kyle Anderson's first time calling me.
I don't know. I think.
Or if not, maybe he didn't use the word, but he's intimated as much. I don't think that happened in a vacuum is what I'm getting at. I think that was the culmination of a season's worth of frustration.
I agree with the culmination part. I agree with that. In the end, but I still say the biggest problem Minnesota has top to bottom, and I know that people are just going to think I'm picking on this dude, but whatever. The fact that they even thought they needed to trade 4 first-round picks to get Rudy Gobert in the first place is a staggering indictment of Karl Towns.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half of that game, from what you guys have told me, was, again, a staggering indictment of Karl Towns. Yes, Anthony Edwards shot 3-for-17. All of that, right? Get that. But you, Karl Towns, in year 7, going into year 8, should not need you to go call in backup.
No, if you have a center, why are you trading for a center?
Because they don't have a center. They got
a glorified power forward. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's Ralph Sampson. Like, that's the game that he wants to play, is kind of any ball version of Ralph Sampson. Now, of course, Big Vic gonna come out here, and Big Vic is everything we thought Ralph Sampson possibly could have been times 1,000. That's a whole, like, if Ralph Sampson had handles.
If Ralph Sampson could shoot a 3 and follow his own miss and dunk it, like where they do that at?
Yeah. He landed the part of that play that is so impressive is not just that he did a step back 3 and then got his own tip dunk. It's not just that when he got the tip dunk, he barely jumped. Yeah. It's that the guy had, the reason he didn't get boxed out is because the dude guarding him had to get out of the way to stop from getting in the landing area. But Big Vic landed on one leg and went straight forward off of that one leg. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like he took the shot, both feet hit, and then he had to, scramble and get his feet right. No, he landed on one leg and went straight forward. And it was like, I'll watch.
Not that there's any question about him going number one, but, going back to NFL draft, remember Jadeveon Clowney on, was it Mike Hart? And was that the Citrus Bowl?
I forget the dude's name. It wasn't Mike Hart, but I know you're talking about Vince.
From Michigan, yeah. Yeah, and he just, dislodged him. And it, from the football and his helmet. And that play just is on loop over and over again. It's like, hey, Jadeveon Clowney, throwing the film. Nope, just this one play. Like, Wembanyama. Nope, one play. All you need to see. All you need to see about this dude is that one play.
Let me tell you something.
I could watch that over and over again.
Let me tell you something. Once the lottery's over, if I'm a scout or anybody on the team that gets the number one pick, baby, we about to have the easiest 2 months at work we done ever had. I ain't watching no videos.
Yeah, right.
Like, all these times, you always see they do all these, perfunctory things just to go, like, when some guys have the pro day, you just go to show up, you know, see what it is or whatever.
Yeah.
But like when John Elway was coming out, right? We don't need to go. We don't need to go to no game.
We can save y'all a bunch of time, man.
Like, why are you even having?
You ain't got to come in the office.
Yeah, like there's so many dudes. They're like, why are you even at the combine?
Yeah.
Like, you just want to go to Indianapolis? You never been there before? Okay, I guess.
Dude, this is my favorite time of year. These two drafts. I appreciate you, man. You just started my day off right. talking NFL draft, my boy. You know I live for this.
I did that for you.
I
knew you'd be so excited, and we could do it without getting super dirty in the weeds. On another day, we could talk about. I'll just ask you this right quick: are you a don't take a running back in the first round guy?
For the most part.
Which sounds
Bijan
like
Robinson.
But it sounds like you feel the same way I do about Bijan.
Yeah, I mean, that's certain dude. I mean, I don't care about Saquon Barkley's career, has, you know, obviously he's had some injuries. I don't care about Ezekiel Elliott not making it through the second contract. He was great for several years. I mean, if you got a dude that's just like generationally special, if we were doing a draft over from last year. You mean to tell me somebody ain't taking Breece Hall in the first round?
Right. I mean, Todd Gurley's my example. Has Sean McVay looked like a genius since Todd Gurley got hurt?
I mean, he looked pretty good last year. Or year before last.
He looked pretty good. I said, has he looked
like a genius? An offensive genius? Yeah, that's fair.
If you go run 11 personnel all the time in the way that they do, having a Todd Gurley changed everything. Go look at all the touchdown numbers he put up and everything else, right? Look at Kyle Shanahan looking like a genius, extra mo again after they went and got Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like guys like that just take you to another level. But if you're just trying to be functional, then to answer your original question, it would have to be, he'd have to be super, super exceptional.
Well, I get not doing it like in the top five or whatever. I think the argument is silly when you get late in the first round where the money isn't that big and you're basically paying what you would pay a decent veteran that you would pick up off the scrap heap and think that you can figure it out with. But if you got a dude that you can split out wide, like the point I made on here was you telling me if Marshall Faulk is in this draft, you're not taking him in the first round?
LaDainian Tomlinson? Come on, man. I mean, there's a lot of dudes that have gone in the first round and it's been great return on that investment.
And so, I'm
a best player person in the first round. If that best player happens to be a running back, I'm taking it. I'm not going to say, oh, he's better, but he's a running back and we can get somebody in the fourth. Like, no, what's your grade on him? You know? Yeah.
But I also feel like this too. Running back, the easiest position to figure out if it's a beast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one. We don't get those wrong very much. Like, nobody was like, wow, I can't believe Adrian Peterson's out here looking like an all-pro.
Right. The funny part was when my man went, I was talking about him in another context the other day. I forgot what it was. You remember when Adrian Peterson, they drafted him seventh? In his rookie year, he was splitting time with,
Chester Taylor.
Chester Taylor. he was returning kicks and splitting time with Justin Taylor, one of the greatest running backs of
Adrian
all time.
Peterson was splitting time his freshman year at Oklahoma.
See, when he should have been in the NFL. Speaking of splitting time, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left. We could talk about this another day. The backup at Texas, Rashawn Johnson?
Yeah, he's good.
You want to talk about like waiting to take a running back? I will gladly take him in the second. If I got him in the third round, that's stealing money. Second round, but that dude is a monster. Just so happened to be behind Bijan Robinson.
I also would just like to take this brief moment to point out that with these guys that we have discussed and a five-star recruit at quarterback and some other players that we won't name right now, Texas checked in at a robust 8-5.
I'm sorry, man.
No, I don't. You know, I don't root for them no more. So I'm just letting everybody know, like, this is way to go, Sark. See you, big dog. Way to
good luck, Arch.
I really don't know what your man Arch was thinking.
Yeah,
Arch might not start for 2 years. I mean, like, I really don't. I don't understand. I'm glad I don't do that no more. That's all I'm saying.
Glad you didn't got off that narcotic.
That is right. That is Michael Smith. Check him out on Brother From Another on the Peacock Network. My man, I appreciate you.
Always a pleasure, Bo.
Thank you, sir. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. We do this 3 days a week. Idy Khan, Parker Owens, Dan Stancic, handling everything behind the scene. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.